Hey, but this is our special Valentine's Day episode.
It's our quickie.
Yeah.
It's a Valentine's Day quickie.
Whoa. I don't think anybody wants to hear that on Valentine's Day. I think we're going to take it long and slow.
long, slow, hard, and to the point.
Yeah, so special Valentine's Day episode. It's not Valentine's Day today, but it will be later in the week.
It should be Valentine's Day every day. I got some issues with Valentine's Day and what it posits itself as being and say, hey, on this day, you bring her flowers and chocolate and take her out. But on the other days, yeah, it's all right to take a back seat. But when February 14th rolls around, make sure you're on your point.
Yeah. The only problem I have with Valentine's Day are those heart-shaped candies. I never liked them.
You mean the ones they pass around and as
yes,
kids?
And they have the little notes on them
those
or whatever.
Those were fun.
I know, but I never liked the taste. They're like chalky. They taste like the old cigigarette candy that you used to. I don't like that taste, but people seem to like it. So
Valentine's Day exchanges in grammar school are so educational. If you look back and you really absorb what went down there, it's all popularity contest. And unfortunately, I don't know how things have changed, but I was the kid in third or fourth grade who was like, maybe this is the year the girl I'm into is going to like send me a secret note via this Valentine's Day cutout card.
You got the same card everybody else had.
I choose you. I choose you or will you be mine? Oh, man.
We had the Animaniacs when I was a kid. That was
nice.
That was legit. But yes, I am Philip, by the way.
I'm Sasha. This is episode blah, 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 blah.
Film Room. Yes, today's episode is going to be on this movie that I absolutely love and Sasha likes, but I love it. I've seen it like 20 or 30 times.
It's crazy and stupid to love this movie.
Yeah, it's crazy, stupid, love. I think there's commas in between those, but
there are. Yeah.
And I don't know, another grammar mistake. Shouldn't there have been an and love? I guess not.
Crazy, stupid, and love?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be proper grammar?
No, because what this movie's trying to say is these are all the types of love that can be experienced. And yeah, there should have been more precursors. It should have been crazy, stupid, non-believable,
crazy, stupid,
honest, truthful, and there were a lot of things.
So many movies like this. Eat, Pray, Love.
Love, actually.
Yeah. Anyways, but for this one, it's going to be Crazy, Stupid, Love with Steve Carell, Emma Stone, Julianne Moore,
Ryan Gosling,
Kevin Bacon,
Ryan
Gosling's abs.
They're more prominent in this movie than anyone I can remember.
I think this was the first movie he got ripped for, though, because before this, I just remember the Titans, and he was that cornerback that couldn't cover any wide receiver, and he had to go give his job to Petey. Mm. Okay, that's how I remember Ryan Gosling. He used to listen to country music, and it was Cruel and Unusual Punishment. That's what it was. I messed up that line, but we're going to keep going. He must have been eating almond milk and working out with Schwarzenegger or something.
Well, I mean, when you read the script, it's pretty clear pretty quickly what that character is going to have to represent. He's going to have to represent the alpha male guy who goes to the bars and the clubs and picks up every woman at his will, and he is a womanizer at the end of the day.
Yeah, he's a rich womanizer that doesn't have anything to do. I mean, he's living off of money that he inherited, basically. Mm-hmm. But the movie's really not about him. I would even say that it is a summation of the characters. It's a great ensemble cast, but I think the movie wants you to center in on Steve Carell's character. It starts off
from
with
the
him.
Jump.
Yeah, yep. I mean, jump. He jumps out of the car in the very beginning, right? Yeah, because his wife lets him know that she wants a divorce. Mm-hmm. And that's how the movie starts.
Over dinner, a one, yes. Two, three. The beauty of that scene is that anybody who's married or in a long-term relationship can agree. It is very difficult to pick a place to eat together. It's also very difficult to pick what you want to eat off of a menu just as human beings. And so the beauty of that scene is that they do like any married couple and they say, on three, let's just come up with what we want. And then Steve Carell comes up with creme brulee. That's it. Creme brulee. And Julianne Moore spits out the D word.
Divorce.
Yes.
So you guys don't get mixed up.
The dots.
I wonder if this movie takes place on Valentine's Day. Why are they at the dinner? Remember, because they are
celebrating
older
the
couple.
Anniversary, perhaps.
Oh, it was the anniversary, maybe. Yeah. I forget. I've seen it so many times, though. But what I love about the opening, too, that people may like miss, it's just kind of like film speak, is that the movie actually opens up with everybody's toes touching each other underneath the table. Different shoes. It's like they're trying to actually show you the different types of people that like each other, mm-hmm. and they're all in love. And then they show you his and her shoes, and he's got the New Balance on, and then she's got the nice ones, and they're not touching, they're separated.
Nice pair of New Balances, man.
Yeah, they weren't new, bro. They were pretty used.
You're talking to a guy, I have to be a little candid here, talking to a guy who's worn the same pair of Reeboks for a year and a half. You asked me who I relate to most in this movie. It's Steve Carell's character. That is me in a nutshell, without the threat of divorce, of course. I love my wife. I hope she loves me as much as I love her. We've been married for one big year, been together for 6.5, but Steve Carell's, I don't see a problem with the guy other than the assertiveness and confidence issues that he has that are underlying and sort of get probed into and revealed through Ryan Gosling's mentorship.
I'm with you there. I think the movie is not trying to say that there's anything really too bad about Steve Carell, especially at the core of his character. I think what they're trying to get at is that he's lost his will to be better. He's okay with everything. He's just like, eh. And he's going through life kind of just like lackluster, and he's kind of bringing his wife along, and that's why she has an affair. They've been together since they were in high school. She got pregnant when she was like 17 or something.
Yeah.
And they've been together for a very long time. They're probably in their, what, late 40s,
I would say mid to late 40s.
Yeah, so it stands to say that, like, he... Now, I don't excuse what she did, because I must be forthcoming with this.
Most movies,
yeah, most movies that have infidelity in them, I don't usually forgive the other partner at all. I'm a big stickler for that.
I have some issues with this too. Movies with infidelity in them make it seem like it's an everyday occurrence. Yeah. Yes,
and that's what I'm saying. That, like, with infidelity, it just rubs me super wrong. I think it does for most people. Yeah. I would think, and that. With this movie, that's what was amazing to me, is that I was actually okay. Spoiler alerts, even though every show you should know that there's spoiler alerts, okay?
Yeah, the nature of a film room is you sit in a room after seeing the film and you study it.
Yeah, or just listen to us, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyways, this movie actually made me okay with Steve Carell and Julianne Moore's character getting back together. It's one of the only movies that I was able to forgive the other partner for cheating. Like, I can't. It's like, it's unforgivable at this point. But really, forgiveness is kind of at the heart of this movie, because forgiveness, it takes a lot of love for that, man. It takes more.
About forgiveness.
Yeah.
Even if you don't love me anymore.
Yeah. Well, I feel like forgiveness is a godlike thing to do. I mean, nobody really deserves forgiveness. That's the whole point, is that forgiveness has no, you know.
I agree. And
you don't earn it. It's just given. But anyways,
I don't think we should spend our whole lives forgiving people, but no. I do agree, because yes, that can be abused very quickly.
Exactly.
Julianne Moore could get back with Steve Carell at the end of this movie, and she's going back to work with Kevin Bacon, and a year and a half later, they could they could have a shindig on the side again, and then forgiveness has to rear its head again?
I don't know, man. Kevin Bacon, first off, how can you get with Kevin Bacon? Forever unclean.
What's his character's name? It's so memorable.
Linhagen.
Yeah, David Linhagen. Are you sure it's not Linhagen?
I don't remember. They keep saying it back.
No, you remember the sit down with the son.
Well, they say it all the time.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's Linhagen.
Yeah, and the son says, all right, Linhagen.
Yeah. No, but I love this movie because it's got so much heart in it. Even though I'm talking about, like, infidelity, it's got some hard questions on really thinking about, can love overcome a lot of these things? And it can. I think if you are positive about it, I think you can. I think sometimes it takes a better man to forgive, you know, infidelity, you know, because I don't know if I have that in me, but I would hope I do. I just hope it never happens.
I have not had the, it's weird. I've been in relationships where I've been cheated on, and I've had the forgiveness aspect play through. I forgive the two women that took advantage of our time together wholeheartedly, but I didn't do it on the spot.
Well, he doesn't either. But did you?
That's true.
Did you guys break up and get back together, or did you ever get back together?
No, because I
forgiveness is moving on.
Right,
too.
Forgiveness is moving on, and realizing that paths diverge in life, and certain situations.
But you forgave them.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes,
wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
But I also wrote albums. I also wrote. I had an outlet for the forgiveness. Like, I had a way of getting the the anger or the confusion or the frustration of not understanding what was going on out. Because the thing that can't be glossed over, and the characters in this movie have the luxury of being married, so they have to sort of, in order to get to divorce, you have to have the buildup of the discussion to get to that. Mm-hmm. But removed from that, a divorce is really just a breakup. It's a breakup of two married people. So the breakups that everybody out there hopefully listening, to, not hopefully, but realistically, everyone's been through a breakup. And the infidelity within, again, there's that word. Can you even use infidelity when talking about a boyfriend and girlfriend long-term relationship?
Yeah, for sure.
You can, but it's referred
there's
to
as cheating.
There's a commitment there. Yeah, or cheating. So
it's a betrayal.
More people have been cheated on than they've been
in a successful relationship.
Yeah, maybe so. So yeah. It's really hard to, in a relationship, build off of that infidelity and sort of tap into it, because you tend to just move on and say, okay, I'm done with this person. I'm not going to try to work on a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. Not many people do that. Not many people forgive the girlfriend or boyfriend that cheated on them and get back, unless it's something that you feel inside your mind.
I think it happens to quite a bit of people do that. I think it's just that it's not in our realm.
I see
a lot of it out there where people are in unhealthy relationships that maybe somebody keeps doing those things, you know? So it happens, you know? I'm just going to say with these characters, though, there's so much going on, so many perspectives to the babysitter wanting to be with Steve Carell, which is his name Weaver.
This is the stupid part of the title.
Well, I feel the
or
reason,
the crazy. Is it the crazy or stupid?
I think everyone is a little. The reason why it's because love is crazy stupid. It is. Love is not logical, okay? You don't get to choose who you love. You can choose who you can be with.
Sure.
But you don't get to choose who you love. That person can hurt you whether you want them to or not. It just happens. So. For me, love is crazy stupid, and that's why I like it, because you can't really determine what is good. I mean, well, not what is good, but like, okay, like if you are in a relationship and there's infidelity, who's to tell you whether you should be with that person or not, right?
You are.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to say. There's so many different ways that relationships have worked and have not worked. There's no real formula to, this is the relationship that's going to work. It's because it's whatever works.
We're supposed to get away.
It's whatever works.
But we're supposed to get closer to figuring
that
out. Yes,
we're trying to say it's a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's going to work. You can be in a healthy relationship and never be in love with somebody.
That's fair.
That's what I think Emma Stone is.
I'm in a healthy relationship. I was in a healthy relationship with my Xbox One. And
no, that's unhealthy, bro. No, but I'm saying that like Emma Stone's character is that character. She is in what you would call a check-off
with
relationship.
Josh Groban.
His first movie.
Yeah. He's funny in this movie.
Yeah, he's sedated.
Yes.
But he's a lawyer. He's a lawyer.
He's in charge of a firm.
Yeah. He's got money. He's got friends. He's
decent
looking.
On the surface level, he's everything
off.
That
and
you...
And she wants him.
Yes.
She wants him bad. She thinks he's going to propose. But when he doesn't, she's like, freak this guy.
Yeah.
And her best friend's telling her the whole time, like, why, if you end up with this guy, who am I going to end up with? Because, like, he's not cool.
What I don't like about all that is that she had the opportunity. Again, this is where you have a movie, so you have to drag it along a little bit. You have to develop the plot. But she met Ryan Gosling's character already. She could have given in right then and there to the fact that there's more to this Ryan Gosling guy that I'm giving him credit, but she does eventually. It's all movie.
Well, it's not because of him. It's because of her that she goes to him. It was not about the lost opportunity, right? I mean, he tells her straight up when she tells him no, right?
Yeah.
And she objects, right? And he's like leading the witness.
Oh, guys love that.
Yeah. And the point is that he's like, hey, I can tell you that if you go home with me tonight, basically that you won't ever not, you know, regret this. And she's like, that's a double negative. And he's like, you're double negative.
Suave move.
Yeah.
Back and forth banter.
Yeah. He's very good at what he does. Good communication. And I believe Ryan Gosling probably is a little bit like that.
He would have to be in order to come off that naturally with it.
Unless he's a good actor.
Either that or he deserved a nomination for this particular role.
I think so.
Actor.
This was, for me, it was one of his best roles. I it just seemed, it was entertaining to watch him.
Yeah.
It was so good. He has these movements. His whole body has changed. I don't think he gets enough credit for the subtle changes he made in himself for this role.
Yeah.
I felt like he really went hard on this role, more than you would expect somebody to. So I really like Ryan Gosling in this, but like, let's get back to Steve Carell's character, right? So he's left at basically, you know, he jumps out of the car. He's driving home this babysitter. Annalee Tipton is her name?
I think that's her name. Yeah. She's 17.
17 in the movie. I think she's like 24 or something, 30 now almost. She's got a Ralph Macchio thing going on, right? Where she looks younger than she is. But she's in love with Cal Weaver. And the reason why I like this is because it kind of bridges a lot of gaps.
A lot of babysitters are in love, or not in love, but there is that stigma.
We assume from porno movies. But the thing is Cal Weaver's son is in love with a babysitter, right?
Yeah.
And she like walks in on him masturbating underneath the covers.
Crazy.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, and like you had this,
you're crushing
like,
on the babysitter?
I never had a babysitter, to be honest. I grew up in the 80s. They just left
the
TV on for me.
Yeah, they just left you at home with a family member.
If you were lucky. But anyways, I like that there's this real teen angst to her. Like you can see that she really wants to tell him in the car, and there's this really good song playing, and he's just in his own world, and she's about to tell him, and he's like, don't tell your mom and dad about this, about the divorce, you know, when we keep this under wraps. And then she's just left on the side of the road, just like bewildered, like, ugh. But there's this real like desire. I like it when I see an actor or a person with desire in a movie, because I react to desire quite a bit. I think it's part of the thing that drives me and you, or anybody out there that's trying to be passionate about something.
Yeah.
This desire, this yearning. And I could feel it in her. Like she, I don't know if it was just, I don't know if she's a method actor or what.
She could have learned something from the son, from the 13-year-old, and the way that he was just being forthcoming and sort of laying it all out there to her, even though that's the kind of infatuation that we look at and we say, this is a 13-year-old crushing on a 17-year-old. We've all been there, maybe with different ages.
You know, I like that though, that all these things are part of it, because it is crazy stupid, right? I mean, the fact that he's in love with his babysitter, she's in love with him, and
that's
then,
the crazy part.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of crazy parts, right? And so I like that desire, man. I'm glad that they put that in there, that angst, you know, that yearning, because that's part of the young part of this.
The young love.
There's so many different generations here that you can draw from in different places of life. So Cal Weaver, though, he decides to get an apartment. He has to, really.
He
moves
to.
Out.
Yeah.
He's worried about his plants and his grass, you know, because I told you I'm getting a little like that over here, King of the Hill, just thinking about my weeds that I have to, like, you know, pull up, and I have to, like, you know,
some
maintain
of my
the
favorite,
grass.
Yeah, some of my favorite scenes in the movie are where he sneaks back
overnight.
Yes. Yeah, and he's taking care of the garden because he has to.
The Talking Heads are playing while that's going on.
Yep.
Dun, 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 dun. Sorry.
All right, keep it going.
Yeah, but I like what he's... Yeah, it was a good... And he takes off like a cockroach when the lights come on.
Yeah.
But there's another scene where he's in his yard like that too that I love, where he's watching his family.
Yeah.
And she calls
him. The ice cream dessert. Yeah, they're having ice cream.
Are they having ice cream? Well, she calls him and he's watching and she's like, oh, the electricity went out and I don't know how to get
and
the breaker.
And it's not really out.
And he's smiling because he realizes
his wife
misses
him. Yeah.
Because he misses her.
Sure.
And he, you know, the whole point about Cal Weaver and Ryan Gosling, and this might be where you and I differ, is that this man mentor, right? He's kind of like a red herring mentor, though, Ryan Gosling. But he shows Cal Weaver how to communicate to the opposite sex, basically, or to get what he wants, to re-find him his manly side, or his, like, you know, not manly side, but the... I don't know what to say, because it's not really manly. He's not, like, in flannel or anything.
Well, it's important to know Cal Weaver's life before this. So, yeah, I could see how Ryan Gosling's character... his name again?
Oh, man, I forget. I'll come up with it again.
Yeah.
But anyways,
Ryan Gosling's character in this movie is a mentor to the guy who married his 17-year-old high school sweetheart, and they had a kid, and he was a virgin prior to his high school sweetheart.
Yes.
I could see that. But there are so few 45-year-old men going through divorce that are living that sort of life, that this movie's a little disingenuous when it comes to that. Not meaning, like, Cal Weaver is not the typical 45-year-old middle-aged guy whose wife is wanting him to be what they were when they first met. Because if you're saying that's what he needs to find again, then it's
I think you're taking it too literal.
Okay.
Because Cal Weaver, yes, while he's only had sex with his wife.
Yes.
I think that they put that in there as the most extreme sense, right? Like, you're not meant to really be Cal Weaver. Not many of us have only had sex with one person.
Married the lady.
I mean, and if you have, you're living the dream, bro. Yeah, like, honestly, I mean, nobody's going to tell you this.
Until your wife cheats on you, Kevin Bacon.
Oh, my God. Not Kevin Bacon. Anybody else.
Anyways, hey, he had a...
I don't mind Kevin Bacon, but I mean...
The girls
I liked
in Wild
him in
Things loved him.
I don't know, man. He just... Ever since he was the bad guy in X-Men. Anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is that, like, Cal Weaver, they gave you the sense that, hey, no matter if you've only had sex with one girl or, like, 10 or whatever, it covers everybody. But what I was... As far as sexual partners, I don't think that was the important part. That was just to emphasize how far back he stopped. You know, and how long his wife has stayed in this,
or the fact that he never got a chance,
30 years.
Maybe he never got a chance to find out.
He
didn't have a chance to be the Ryan Gosling character.
I don't think that that's what this movie is really trying to say. I don't think that it's even nobody cares about that. What they were trying to build on the character was that this guy has never had game, right? This is what the guy is going to show him how to have game. Uh-huh. He's not trying to show him how to be a better person or whatever. He's just going to find his sexual animal attraction, basically. How do you get women, right? How do you stop being such a blundering mess at the bar crying about David Lindhagen's having sex with my wife? And how does he know that? He's been saying this at the same bar. And the thing is that, you know, Ryan Gosling's character sees him. And this is what I was trying to tell you. He really notices him when his friend comes and his friend says, oh, me and my wife had to choose between you or your wife, and well, my wife chose your wife, so we can't be together anymore. And he hands him cologne and walks off, and he's like, oh, where are you going? And Ryan Gosling's character is seeing this, and intently the camera zooms in on him in between characters. It gets closer and closer, so you know this is more important.
His focus is on that.
Yes. And you realize that, and you know, Cal Weaver, he's the everyday guy, right? He's kind of like the guy that was just... stopped caring about how he looked. He's more into important things
because he married his high school sweetheart.
Well, exactly. So, but that doesn't mean that's what I'm trying to say.
If you marry your high school sweetheart,
that's not the end game. And he treated that as, oh, okay, I won the game. I don't have to do anything anymore. And I think that's what it's getting at, is that marriage is not the end game.
Right.
The game's just starting.
Succeeding.
Yes. Now we have to have
a successful marriage.
A successful marriage is dying together. Right.
Right.
Or I mean, you don't have to die together. Just stay together until somebody dies. But, you know, what I'm saying is that the Ryan Gosling character, there is a connection between the two, because Ryan Gosling is not supposed to be your typical alpha male. He is supposed to be your typical alpha male, but there is a golden heart in there somewhere, right? Because he sees Cal Weaver take this from his friend, and he's lost his friend, his wife, everything, really. And he's just like, I'm going to help this guy get back to a place that he's never been.
Yeah.
And he does. And he does it in his own way. And I love that cut scene where he's like slapping him, and you know, there's that meme with Ryan Gosling where he takes out the Velcro wallet.
You mean the extreme makeover sequence where they go to the mall and they reshape his image.
It's the Rocky montage. That's what that is. But it's entertaining. The way that the jazz is playing, the fast cuts, you know, the everything.
It's the rules. It's a slippery slope though, Philip, because so Steve Carell does end up sleeping with 8 to 10 women his escapade here. And you remember that scene where they're at the parent-teacher conference, and I don't want to fast forward too much. Okay, one of the women that Steve Carell sleeps with when he finally gets his game going and he gets his image intact. Marissa Tomei's character, who's just really great in this movie, really a good energy shifter. She shifts the energy in Cal's favor to where I'm like, ah, yeah, this is the kind of woman that I want to see Cal bounce back with.
Yeah.
Even though you always wanted the wife and him to reconcile, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no.
I did not want them.
But you forgave Julianne.
I didn't forgive
Morris.
Her until the very end. That's why I'm saying this is one of the movies that was successful to change my mindset on maybe that if somebody does cheat on somebody, maybe it can be salvaged.
Oh, I see.
Before this, I was a hard, it'll never be salvaged.
Oh, okay.
But and when I saw this movie, that's why it was so spectacular to me, because, and you know, I still think that most of the time it doesn't work. I think there's exceptions to the rule now. I think there's exceptions to every rule.
We mentioned the 99% Lysol cans in our yes. Contagion episode.
Yeah. That's in the future, really.
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
Dun, dun, dun. Oops. Sorry, a little Inception going on. But, yeah, I really...
There are exceptions to every
rule. Yeah, so this movie really kind of, like, shows a little bit about who I was at different times of my life.
Yeah.
At one point, I was Ryan Gosling. At some point, I was that little boy, you know, Cal Weaver's son. I was Cal Weaver in a certain sense that, like, I don't care about the way I look. You know, like, I kind of cared more about...
Right.
More important things that I deem more important, you know, but you can't let it go. You know what I mean? That's what Cal Weaver did. Let's
get candid here a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been the 13-year-old kid, obviously. I skipped over the entire Ryan Gosling bit. I went straight Steve Carell. I did not go straight Steve Carell as far as marrying my high school sweetheart, but my first relationship, I treated it as if I was in something that needed my utmost diligence and commitment, and that was one of the relationships that ended abruptly or ended in infidelity.
Sounds like you were the 13-year-old back then.
I was the 13-year-old at 19, 20.
Sounds like you're Cal Weaver right now, bro. Let me see. Were you wearing New Balance? Let me see.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm wearing an old dingy pair of Reeboks, but
same difference.
Well, it is the same difference, but the difference is I don't have $850 to flip a champagne bill on.
That was rough.
So that's the main difference. If I had that, then but again, what are we fighting for at the end of the day? It's a weird.
Well, Cal Weaver knows what he's always known. He's lost it. Ryan Gosling has never had that.
Yeah.
So that's why he's a red herring mentor. When he comes in and gets Cal what he needs, because that's what Cal's missing.
Here's one of the superficial problems I have with this movie. It makes it seem like money fixes all this.
Definitely not. No, definitely not.
But they go on a shopping spree and it fixes all this.
You can fix a good amount of communication with, buying a new wardrobe.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, overnight, Steve Carell's a ladies' man in the bar, and it's all because... He hasn't changed his mindset. Remember, the first time they go back and he's got his new wardrobe, he is still clunky, and he's bumbling over his words, and he sits down with one of those girls, and he starts telling her about like a cartoon show he watched as a kid, and how he makes the little references. That's the kind of... I don't want to put myself in a woman's mentality, but that's the kind of guy that I seek out in a friendship right now, is the people that I can have those sorts of conversations with. But apparently that's not what the girl in the bar is looking for.
Well, see,
and I skipped the whole girl in the bar, what they're looking for phase, because I never sought women in bars.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, sir,
okay.
I've had a lot of experience between the ages of 19 and 27, probably somewhere around there.
Okay.
Like I said, there was one point where I was the kid. I was hurt a couple of times, and then I became the Ryan Gosling character because I didn't think anybody cared anymore. And
you did the hurting back.
No, not really hurting back, just more like...
Unattachment.
Unattachment is a good way to say it, yeah. And I learned how to dress better. I learned the rules of what my body is capable of portraying, and like, you know, I'm a shorter guy, so I can't wear the same things as you do as a taller guy. You know,
there's, you can't wear the sweatpants and
dude. I'm telling you, hoodies. I totally changed my demeanor. Okay. Like after I got GQ, I learned the rules of the suits. I learned the rules of jeans, like the inseams and the different cuffs and all this stuff. And it changed the way I changed my hairstyle. I started working out a lot more. I became more attractive, and it didn't happen overnight, and that's because I was overweight, but I got in real good shape.
Interesting.
If it wasn't for the shape part, I bet you I could have gotten there a lot quicker just from the way you speak and the way you present yourself, because you can cover up a lot.
That's something that they tap into a little bit in this movie.
That's what I mean. So all that, yes, it can be fixed. Mm-hmm. You can fix that, all of that. But I think what Ryan Gosling saw in the character is something that you can't fix in somebody, and that was his heart. The way that guy was hurt and who he was.
Well, Cal arguably has more heart than Ryan Gosling, and Cal's the one who teaches Ryan Gosling a little bit about heart.
Well, I think it was Emma Stone that taught him that. It changed him.
Isn't that weird that they're
Cal Weaver?
They both have relationships with Emma Stone.
Well, see, that's the thing. Emma Stone is Cal Weaver's daughter, the one that she got pregnant, the 17-year-old, and that's why you don't know this until the end. It's a reveal. Towards the end, you're like, "Holy crap!" It was well written, a little Hollywoody, but it was okay. But you know, I like that because it would make sense that Emma Stone's character was taught by Cal Weaver how to be a good person. Connections and all that, and it was very. I liked Emma Stone's character because she wasn't the person that was going to cheat on her, dude to be with Ryan. She waited until after that. He made her so upset. She was like, "You know what? I'm through. I'm done." And then she goes and wants to hook up with him because inside she always kind of wanted to. You know, I think she thought he was hot. I mean, that's the way it goes. It's all about context, you know,
perception,
and it just seems like many women are not looking for the Cal Weavers, they're looking for the Ryan Gosling's character. All that can be manufactured, you know? And that's what I think that is what they're trying to say, that all of this is just a game, and you can be good at it if you want, but it's never going to get you what you're actually wanting.
Yeah, bro.
The connection. And that's where Cal Weaver's character, he goes through this because he loses it. His son definitely helps him find it because all he ever wanted was to be back with his wife. That's really what he wanted. He missed his wife. And even though he's sleeping, he has conquered. He slept with a lot of women, a lot of hot women at will. He could do it whenever he wanted. But that's not what he really wanted. And he was always smart enough to know that. And Ryan Gosling didn't know that until enter Emma Stone, right? She changes everything because when he's about to sleep with her, she wants to know more. What does she ask about? She asks about, do you have one of those vibrating chairs from Brooks Brothers? Mm-hmm. And he laughs and he's like, yeah, I do. Yeah. And then she's like, I hate it. And she's in those chair. And they start talking about who their mother is and how their life was. And in all this time, he's been the loneliest character, really, Ryan Gosling. He thought he had everything figured out. He has everything that a lot of people would check off as being successful, right? Lots of money, good looking, gets all the women, has a great place, you know, whatever. But he didn't have the things that mattered. And what mattered was Cal Weaver being his friend. What mattered was Emma Stone wanting to know more about him.
Yeah.
So for me, he was the most tragic character out of everybody, even though it's perceived as, oh, he's the best out of everybody. And he too, in turn, learns through Cal Weaver's story what is important, you know? And he decides to be with Emma Stone. And he says, she's a game changer. That's what he tells her. But Cal can't accept it. And that's why he tells Cal,
that's
you're
he's
a good
seen,
dad.
Yeah, he's seen...
He's seen too much.
Too much.
But see, that's why...
That's what he says. I've seen too much.
I've seen too much, yeah. But that's the truth, though. But see, somebody can change. I changed, you know? I think a lot of people want that. They want to be able to change for somebody worth it.
You changed without the Steve Carell relationship. At least, I'm not... Hopefully, I'm not speaking out of bounds here. But you changed simply because of the Emma Stone.
No, I it took some time for me, I think, because... You know, when you look back on things, you're having a lot of fun and you're being with your... I had friends. You know, that's the thing, is that I latched on to my support group, which were friends.
Maybe that's the difference. Yeah. I had friends, but I wasn't actively socially engaged with my friends. I wasn't spending week in, week out with my friends.
My roommate at the time was in the same fraternity as me. We worked together at the same bank. We partied Wednesday through Saturday.
So it's fair to say that
that's the way it was.
It's fair to say that there was again, I don't want to speak out of bounds here, but there was an image that you had to sort of maintain from week to week to week to week.
You
that,
know,
that was outside of your realm of control?
I think it was that I bought into my own image.
Okay.
That's what it was. Like, I wanted to be something, and I became
it. And you wanted to sustain it.
Well, not only that, but I feel like I actually became it.
I see.
You know, you become the image you want to be.
I see.
And it's a very powerful tool to, like, okay, this is what I want to be, and then attain it. And I did, and I had a lot of fun, but ultimately... And I don't regret it. I actually enjoyed the learning process.
I don't think you are who you are today without having gone through that.
Yeah, and what it does is it just gives you an extra confirmation of what I have now. This is what I love, being married. You know, I'm not going to have a midlife crisis because I got all of that out.
Yeah.
I'm in no danger. I've partied my ass off. What can I say?
Okay, this is the part where I don't want Crazy Stupid Love to come out and say, you have to go through that to look back and say, I don't want Crazy Stupid Love to be the authority on, you need to have a balance of being a womanizer and being Steve Carell to produce the best product you can be.
I think the message can definitely be misconstrued as that. Mm-hmm. I think it's not a good interpretation. What I see is that Cal Weaver, the reason why he lost everything was because he didn't work at it. Because all he had to do was work a little bit. Look at what he was able to accomplish when he worked a little bit at his image on getting women. Sure. Can you imagine what he could have accomplished if he put his wife as that important? And that's what the problem was. And even in his kids, he kind of brushes off. They have babysitters. I mean, his daughter's just constantly dancing in front of the TV. That's Joey King, by the way.
But don't forget what the babysitter, and again, maybe there's a bias there, but the 17-year-old babysitter says, you know, when she talks to Julianne Moore, after Julianne Moore comes back from her date with Kevin Bacon,
I don't want your
slutty money scene. And what she says to Julianne Moore there is, you know, I babysit some people, and you guys are the only family where the kids say, I want to stay up until dad gets home. Mm-hmm. You're a great mom and all that, but not many people, not many families have that sort of, the children aren't saying, I want to stay up till daddy comes home. That, to me, that should win Julianne Moore over right then and there. Mm-hmm. See, this is the part where it's difficult to speak for other people, and I want to, but for me personally, there should be certain things that supersede...
Julianne Moore's character already felt that before that happened. I know.
Mean?
She was at a date with Kevin Bacon, and she was not feeling it.
And she's looking at a guy so across the
She
across
had
the
a
table.
Midlife crisis.
Yes.
That's the problem. And when people have midlife crisis, usually, what I see, it's because they want
it's
to
self.
Do something that they were unable or didn't do.
You bet.
To relive something in their youth.
You bet.
Or they're curious about something they never experienced. And I think because they were together with only each other.
Be weary.
She was curious and she was, not bored, but just their marriage was a little lifeless.
But you're at the point where responsibilities.
True.
And a lifestyle needs to it needs to take more.
I get
more
it.
Own, yeah,
I hate it, infidelity. There's no excuse for it. Yeah. I can come up with all these excuses. What I'm saying to you, mm-hmm. I really I understand why she did it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it was still the wrong decision, no matter what. No, like you shouldn't cheat on your significant other. That's just it.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling that you need to get out, maybe you need to have that conversation. There's no reason to betray your significant other like this. So I'm with you on that, but this story is not about...
I don't want people to think that there was anything wrong with Steve Carell's character here.
No, there's definitely a lot wrong with him.
What?
There's a lot wrong with Cal. Like I said, okay, so here's an example. You may be a rich person, right? And let's say you buy your 16-year-old a car, right? You bought her a nice one, like a BMW, right? Now, let's say you're a poor person. And you bought your son like a Pinto, but that was all the money you had. You scrounged up for everything. See, it's the try. You know, if somebody's rich and gives like very little effort, and it's like that present doesn't matter. I mean, some people out there, you know, they value money and the way it is. But the real truth and love of this story is about the effort that you put in for the people that you love. You can't give up.
I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Can't give up.
What the movie is saying effort is not wearing New Balances and clothes that isn't your style at 45 when you go out on a date with your wife. And unfortunately, I don't agree with that psychology. When I'm 45, I can't forecast 9 years in advance, but if I'm married 11 years into it and I throw on a pair of rugged sneakers and a jacket, I don't equate that with trying 11 years into marriage. I'm not trying to uphold the same pedigree that got me in with my wife. I'm trying to evolve from that.
No, I get it, but tell me this, that's your perspective.
Yeah.
On your wife's perspective, she may want that, and that's you trying. You may not be into that, But if you try for her because that's important for her for this reason or another, it doesn't even have to make sense.
Okay.
That's love. That's crazy, stupid love. It's crazy, stupid. Like, look, love is not fucking logical. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. It's like there's no empirical evidence for love.
We're tapping into it.
That's what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't matter. What matters is that you try. If your wife wanted you to bungee jump and you have a crazy fear of heights,
you bet.
If you just got up on that stage and couldn't do it, hey, at least you tried, man.
Cooking is a beautiful representation of this because when you get married or when you're in a relationship, this is where marriage
pays. Feed each other, man.
Marriage pays dividends in this way. Like, there is stuff that I would not have tried from my mom's cooking had my mom said, hey, I'm making this tonight. But when my wife says, hey, I'm making this tonight, I have to try.
Yeah.
I have to try. And what happens is I end up loving the stuff.
Or you're in the emergency room.
Or you're being poisoned on your deathbed. No.
But that's the point. This story is that.
But the trying in this movie was so insignificant to me. It was all image based.
Well, of course, but that's the point. It's not logical, dude. Like, it's not about what she wanted. She wanted him to change the way he looked and did stuff.
And Kevin Bacon looks like a more of a schmooze and sleazeball than or more of a loser than Steve Carell did.
Yeah, of course, but isn't that often the way it is? The person they cheat with is not as good as the person they're with.
Which it's is even more mind-boggling.
Well, of course, you don't have to understand it, but you can see that it happens. And for me, the whole point is that you can't stop trying.
Yeah.
And that's why his son asked him, at what point did you stop trying? When did you give up? He said, I didn't give up. She cheated on me. It's you know, he's like, those are all just excuses. If she is your soulmate, if you believe in that, then you can't ever give up on her.
Oh, you're right.
And that's the point of that son, the son point was that, and I believe that, if somebody is your soulmate, you can never give up trying. If this is really the person you're supposed to be with, and if they believe that, and that's the point, is Cal Weaver gave up on that idea. And that's the point. You can't. And that's what I love. It's so endearing, this movie, is that throughout all the crap that this guy has taken or this person's taken or whatever, he never did stop trying at the end. And that's what makes you love him, Cal, is that through even though he may have been right in certain circumstances, and that's what love is, right? You may be right, but is that more important than being happy? That's a lot of people ask you that question in a marriage. Is being right more important than being happy? And that's the point, is this. Like, yeah, Cal is right to leave her and never be with her, not try anymore, and go and sleep with all these women and try to move on. But the fact that he didn't in order to be happier, because the truth is he does believe that that's his soulmate. He said it many times. They got together young. You know, she made a mistake.
It's one of the more endearing statements in the movie where he says,
stop loving you.
No, there's that scene where, I don't remember the exact scene, but somebody asks him, who is that? He says, that's my soulmate. She gets in a car. Julianne Moore gets in a car, and he has this epiphanic moment again where he realizes, I'm going to fight, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, man. I love this story because for the people that don't have the quote-unquote perfect marriage, there is no perfect
marriage.
Would
you watch this movie on Valentine's Day?
Yeah, I would. I'd watch this movie. I watch this movie all year round. Like, but, you know, honestly, though, me and my wife have a tradition where we watch an old black and white movie that we've never seen, a romantic movie on Valentine's Day. Kind of, it sometimes works. Sometimes it's really bad. Like, we're like, oh my God, this was not good.
Do you have any sneak peeks or any sort of insight into what's going on this year?
We haven't figured out this year. It'll be a last minute, like last year, I think we did West Side Story or something like that. And then the year before that, we did
Casablanca. We did
Casablanca the first year. That's what started this.
Nice.
And then we did The African Queen the year before that. So we just try to watch a movie like that. But and like I said, you like where you're at, you don't want to have to go out and get dressed up. We're kind of there together.
No. We want to. With us, unfortunately, it's strictly financial that prevents us from doing that on a weekly basis. And plus, we've also got a 3-year-old as well. So
it's
difficult to balance all that.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I get that too. Me and you are both here in our pajama pants and hoodies.
Sir, these are $40 sweatpants. I just wear them every day, so they look
$20. These are Calvin Klein, bro. Okay.
Nice. But yeah, I am in a large hooded sweatshirt.
We're there together, man. And, you know, but it is a wake-up call. Don't let it go too far. Don't forget to get dressed up for your wife every now and then, or to get good looking, or do something special for her, you know, because that's
shave.
The point. Yeah, or to shave, right? I shaved yesterday, by the way.
I shaved last year.
Yeah. But anyways, so we're getting into the philosophy of this movie, but we haven't even gone into the technical things, and I want to get into that quick. So this is an interesting movie because the directors,
it's a couple of guys.
It's Glenn Ficarra or Fissara. I don't know how to pronounce that.
It's Ficarra.
Ficarra and John Requa, right? And they direct together. Like, they don't really...
All the time. Nothing else they've done is on my radar.
They produce, they write, they do a bunch of stuff. But they're kind of interesting. So, they did I Love You, Philip Morris, which is a completely underrated movie. Such a great movie.
Jim Carrey. And,
yes. Yeah. It's a really good movie.
It is good.
People should watch it. They did Focus. They directed Focus.
Oh, with 2015. Margot Robbie and Will Smith.
Yes.
That's underrated as
Whiskey
well.
Tango Foxtrot as well.
I have not
in 2016.
Seen that one. Tina Fey.
Tina Fey, yes. Yeah. I thought it was a great movie, too.
Have not seen it.
So they do a lot of like kind of real life, but not real life movies, it seems. Like, you know, all those movies kind of share that. But the writer was Dan Fogelman. I don't know if you know him, but he did screenplays. He did Cars in 06.
Did he do Dan in Real Life with Steve Carell?
No.
Okay, because that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be. But he did Fred Claus in 07, Bolt in 08, and Tangled in 2010, which is my favorite Disney princess, by the way. Just a little offshoot. But those are the screenplays he wrote. The written-by movies he did was Cars 2, The Guilt Trip in 2012, Las Vegas in 2013, and Danny Collins 2015, Life Itself in 2018.
All right, man. Sorry. This is where I go back to Crazy Stupid Love, and there is a lot of Disney-fied look at love stuff in this movie. There's a lot of Hollywood, and it makes a little more sense now that you tell me who's writing this movie. I like the movie. I do. I do believe it paints a sensationalized look at the perspectives that you can have. At the same time, there is some grounded, if you dig into it and you tap into the philosophies that it's really trying to get to, but I think that's more you doing it than the movie doing it.
Maybe. I think that Disney, for me, I actually think of it as a positive. I think Disney has some of the best think tanks in the world. When you start looking at the way Pixar was made, mm-hmm. I think they probably adopted that way of making movies because their movies are so successful and so good.
And animated, too.
Yeah, and I love the round table, mm-hmm. the way they do it, that nobody is bigger than the other person. Everybody has the same say-so, and they're just about the story. And to me, that is always what it's about. So for me, the fact, like, Disney has Imagineers. They've been making, to me, yes, they have some bad stuff going on, but I think they've evolved the world into a little bit better place. They've given kids a little bit of a morality on certain stories and things like this that aren't, like, I mean, you could read Grimm's Fairy Tales or Arabian Nights, and they're not going to give you the Disney-fied version. These things are very bad, and they have little moral concepts, but Disney really tries to bring, it seems like, kindness and love and compassion and a lot of the threads in their storytelling. And that's something that I respond to very much because I always try to keep a positive outlook in life, even when things are the worst, just for my mental and heart health. And I love Disney for that.
Well,
and
let me get a little cynical with it. Just a tidbit.
On Valentine's Day, of course.
We have to. No, we don't have to. But when it comes to Disney, I think they are the group in Hollywood that wants to be the authority on having some of the deeper philosophies figured out. And I think that they do.
I think they do.
But that's the dangerous line to walk, because if they do, then what we're saying, and I don't know that there's a direct relationship between Crazy Stupid Love and Disney. What I'm saying is that Dan Fogelman has a relationship with Disney, and that he has a direct relationship with Crazy Stupid Love.
Well, it doesn't, because this is a Warner Brothers movie.
Right. But Dan Fogelman did have a direct relationship with Disney. And then in 2011, he comes over, and I just don't want Dan Fogelman to come over and say, okay, the treatment for Crazy Stupid Love is going to be, I know what love's all about, and let me try to put that in on paper and on film, because I come in and watch this movie, and this is where my life has to kick in a little bit, and yours as well when you watch the movie. You are adding more to the movie than you realize when you watch this. I don't think, I think you should give yourself more credit for your, what you get out of the movie, because what you're giving it is you're contrasting your life with what you're seeing on the screen, which is great for the movie to do.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that you're looking at that movie and saying, oh, this is, I don't want this movie to be a manual for how people look at love. I just don't want it to do that.
I think that you're worried about something that's not happening.
Okay.
I don't think that that's happening at all. What I see is
Ryan Gosling's not the way to spend your 20s.
Well, that's debatable. That's debatable. Listen, if you need that, do it, because here's the thing. It's not a manual about love. What it is kind of, you can look at it as a manual to be better at
everything.
Not everything, but being better at having a bigger percentage of success rate with other women when it comes to Ryan Gosling. I think that he gives real truths there if you really want to be successful. Because here's the thing. There are good guys out there that do not know how to do that. And a lot of good guys are not confident.
The good guys aren't going to the bars, period.
Not all of them, but
they just don't want to.
I'm telling you, a good amount of guys that I've seen, and I'm in a fraternity, so I've seen younger guys and older guys. They don't have the type of charisma or confidence or things. They say the wrong things and all that. But I've seen a lot of women dismiss men that don't have that, and yet they're asking for a good guy. But confidence is not indicative of being a good guy. Even bad people have confidence, right? So it has nothing to do with that. So I like it because I think there's a lot of guys out there that seem to not know how to do that, and this can help you. If you don't have a friend to show you the ropes, this could help you on being a better communicator, on getting something, getting a bigger percentage of being successful at getting somebody that you actually want to be with. But on the other sense, as far as the love part goes, I think there are truths to what Dan Fogelman wrote, things that I didn't even realize. Like I said, why somebody would forgive a partner that cheated on them, especially in the most biggest betrayal, like this person has kids, they've been married, they got together at 17, and now it's all ruined. I would see that as like, you ruined everything, you flushed it all. I would be so upset. But this movie made me realize that
it's because he wore New Balances.
No, it was because I'm still not even mad at him for losing. I'm still upset at her for what she did. There's even a line he says, I'm still so mad at you.
Yeah,
you know, he's like but I miss you. And that's the point, is like, at what point do you just...
But of course you're going to miss somebody that you've been with for 30 years.
Of course, but there was this... And I always tell my wife this, that we have to strive for being in sync, like knowing
Simpatico.
Each other. Yeah, just something like we don't have to tell each other anymore.
Yeah.
And that's where they're at after 30 years of marriage.
You could also get in trouble for that, because if you try to finish someone else's sentence...
It's an upward battle,
we're
guys.
We're working on it.
But when
you do it with a quiet, lip sealed, and just do it in your mind.
I'm in
Doctor
the back,
Strange
like,
it.
No, but what I'm trying to say is that, like, you know, there is... I still think she was completely in the wrong. She didn't give it a chance to work out. But Cal is like, if there's something, maybe it's because, I don't know, I strive to say this, but maybe it's because I'm a guy or a man that, like, I like that he took responsibility, even though it was a small responsibility, he still took that and still tried to get something that he knew was better for himself and for his family and everything, even though he had to get over something that was not even his fault.
But you don't need to sleep with 8 women to do that.
You don't?
Crazy Stupid Love makes a very scary insinuation that you do.
No. In fact, that's what he realizes in the end.
Yes.
Like with the Marissa Tomei character.
Absolutely. But Philip, we're on the film room talking about this. This is what we do. We can jump all that. But Crazy Stupid Love to a 45-year-old guy who's going through divorce, you're going to end up like the guy that Cal sees on the other end of the bar, who also has a wedding ring on, by the way. And
it's this weird formula.
I'm
just going to say I give the audience more credit than that.
Okay.
I think that they'll see this in a better light. I think
our audience too, but I don't know that the
everybody.
Crazy,
yeah, I think really? Everybody, bro. I'm going to give them more credit in saying that this movie is not about putting on better clothes. It's not about, you know, just forgiving anybody. This is not about, you know, all these things. This is about a specific situation that love endured, and it makes me smile. Like, I'm like, I'm glad that it endured things that I thought it couldn't even endure. I wouldn't be able to. And it makes me admire somebody like, even though Cal is a made up person, I'm sure there's people out there that have healed something like that. And I think that they're bigger people than me, or hopefully maybe one day if something like that happened to me, that I could be the bigger person, because I believe in love. I am a little naive in that. I did lose it for a bit, but I got it back, and I didn't have to have a kid to have it, or didn't have to, you know, I don't think I had to, you know, be out there playing the field or whatever. I just think I was hurt, and I didn't think anybody cared about being with somebody like me or something like that, you know? And I just thought, I'm just going to have fun. That's what it really was. It wasn't like I had this, I'm going to get every girl back or whatever. No, it was just about, you know, I'm going to be a little selfish and just have fun no matter what somebody might want from me. I'm just going to do what I like, you know, hang out with my friends and party and do this. And that was selfish of me, and it's not a way to live. And I think Ryan Gosling's character shows you that, how lonely and rich. And by the way, this is the first movie that Ryan Gosling does eat his cereal. So I just wanted to put that out there, since that was a running meme out there that they used to do.
Yeah.
But he does eat cereal in this one. But I think that it does a good job of showing people that all this superficial stuff, everything that you might want, it matters nothing to, or even the way people treat you or see you, right? The neighbors see them in different, I mean, he's very like, don't tell your parents, right? I don't want them to know we're getting divorced. And you know, they break up with him, and they're judging him and all this stuff. And he's worried about it, but it doesn't matter. Like, he's worried that the teacher's yelling at him out there, right? Marissa Tomei. And then he's worried at the end. But in the end, he realizes that, man, what's really important is that she is my soulmate. And at the climax of the film is when his son is, well, they get in a fight, by the way. They all show up at the same
place. Because the reveal of Emma Stone being...
that's the reveal. She shows up with Steve Ryan Gosling.
Arm in arm.
And like, you know, and then he gets in a fight with him. And then the neighbor girl takes naked pictures of herself to send to Cal, but she never sent them. The wife finds it and all that. They all get in a fight there.
It's like the last 20 minutes of American Beauty.
Yeah. Oh, you and American Beauty. You think this is like American Beauty, but me, it's different. But yeah, I like that love endures. And so at the end, when the son is finally defeated, you know, he's been making these big spectacles to hook up with the babysitter. And he's valedictorian or something like that. And he's giving the speech, and it's just going so bad. He's so negative. And Cal Weaver stops it, and he goes up there, and he's like, this isn't my son. He's like, my son was hurt, and he gives this whole speech, and he tells him, he wins over the crowd, even though Marissa Tomei flips him over, you know? But
who's your favorite character in this movie?
Oh, it's so hard, man. I'm with...
Who's your least favorite? Let's start with that.
Kevin Bacon.
You don't even refer to him as his character name, which is Kevin Bacon. Lynn Hagen.
I hate Kevin Bacon. I'm just saying I hate him in this movie.
I dislike one person more than Lynn Hagen in this movie. I don't remember Julie her Moore? Name. No.
Because I hated her too.
Emma Stone's best friend.
Oh, yeah. I thought she was hilarious, to be honest. Dude. When she's like, oh, no, honey. And she pushes the guy's face because he thinks he can have a chance. That's hilarious, dude.
But that guy, oh man, that's just messed up. It's image over everything with her. It's image over everything.
Of course, and there's a lot of people out there like that, and that's okay. If they want to be that way, that's just not
They're going to end up at bars into their 40s. There's a spoiler alert.
Or she could end up being married to a rich guy. Who knows? I mean, there's all paths to making it work. But
yeah,
if she wants to be like that, that's okay. I find her hilarious.
Who's your favorite character?
It's the three dudes. It's Cal Weaver, it's Ryan Gosling, and it's the son. Those three to me were like one person at different points in my life.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know? And maybe that's what they were going for as well.
It might be. So I think, and also it comes from this, you know, like I said, in my life, I had a mentor that was cooler than me, that showed me to be cooler. Mm-hmm. You know, I was unpopular. I've had that a couple of times in my life. And I don't think, I feel like I wish more men had that.
Damn, bro.
Somebody to take over a role model position and help them out with the parts that they aren't good at. And maybe that person, like the way Kyle Weaver changed Ryan Gosling with his heart, you know, he didn't bring the womanizing part, but they healed each other in different ways.
Man.
And so that's why I wish that there was more movies for guys like
that. My
mind's
being blown as we speak. You know why my mind's being blown?
Why?
Because when I needed that guy, I created that guy.
Yeah.
I created an alter ego for myself. And I began writing this music that was
separate from me.
Separate from me.
I get you. No, I did the same. I mean, I think, if, again,
that's just because I didn't have Ryan Gosling to hang around with.
Well, I think I did the same as far as I became different than what was true to who I was.
Yeah.
You know, and you forget that sometimes. And this movie helps you remember. Like, hey, like, and I've told a lot of my friends, guy friends, by the way, who are worried about getting married. They had, you know, wondering if they should. And because I think a lot of guys in their early 20s, at least for me and my experience, we go through this machista type of thing, tough, like, oh, I got
machismo?
With this machismo, you know, whatever. They we get in this like, oh, I've been with this many girls, and that supposedly makes you a better guy.
Yeah,
or,
right.
Or better than them. Or you get this like feeling like that's what it is. It's like you don't want to get tied down.
Well,
you know, that's bad to get married.
Competitive nature of, right? of it. Yeah.
But like women and men, I feel, have a different where they're like, men see as losing the game getting married, and women find like getting married is winning the game. It's like this opposite thing. But like, I've told a lot of, like I said, I told
unless you're
younger
Hugh Hefner,
men,
you're not going to be sleeping around with women left and right until into your 60s.
I mean, if you want to live that way, but I reckon and believe that his life isn't as fulfilled as it could be.
Well,
you know,
he is dead.
Yeah, of course. But what I'm saying is that I've told men that were on the cusp of getting married or didn't know. I told him, look, man, every man or guy feels this on the inside that we all want a good wife or good person to be with, right? You want something that you love that's good. Mm-hmm. And if you have that, do not let that get away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It only comes very often. And not only that, because you got to think of the statistics, man. Somebody that's good for you, right? It can be healthy, that's sane, you know, that can put up with your bullshit, and there's somebody that you want to be with and they want to be with you. It's a statistical anomaly, really.
Yeah.
So don't expect that to come back around because you think you're fly, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell the guys that, look, man, don't let all these other guys tell you, oh, don't get married, it's the end game or whatever.
Yeah.
No, get with that woman because you will regret it if you let her
coming
go.
Coming from two married men, this is sound advice because, yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, we didn't have a married guy telling me this. They always told me, don't get married.
Yeah, sometimes I wish I could have met my wife 3 or 4 years sooner. And we could have I don't know your story with your wife, but my wife was out of the blue when I was least looking for it.
Always happens that way, doesn't it?
You would think so, but
I always take it from Chance from Homeward Bound. You don't want it, okay? And that's how you get the fish, bro.
Dang.
You don't want it.
Chance from Homeward Bound, throwback, but yeah, there's another classic.
Yeah, sorry. It's almost the exact movie.
I don't even know how to follow that up because you're just saying you got your love advice from a fictional dog.
Well, that's why I asked you, did you want to hook up with those girls that you were good with? Because a lot of times when you're wanting something so bad, you mess it up because you get too nervous and all that. So if you are not interested in a girl, like, you actually can just be yourself and you're not worried about messing it up. But see, that's a manufactured thing, the Ryan Gosling formula. See, that's what I'm trying to say. Being a womanizer doesn't take heart. It just takes a little work. It just takes you, and you got to take yourself out of the game. Like, if you strike out, who cares? Move on to the next one. That's what that is.
You,
no attachment. So that's just work. That has nothing to do with heart, or it has nothing to do with being good or anything. It can be learned.
Ryan Gosling had a lot of heart that was waiting to be brought out of him.
Yes, and he lived a very lonely life, and that's how I see him. I mean, he was always drinking old fashions, you know.
Yeah.
And but he, all of his, I would say everything, all his idioms are sound. Okay, like I was saying. First off, every woman does want the dirty dancing move. I don't care if you've never even seen it. Once you've seen it, your life is changing. You want it, okay? I've been at weddings where the wife wanted to be hoisted like that in the air for their dance.
Dang.
And I've seen it happen. And I didn't think it could happen.
Well, Patrick Swayze is arguably the first Ryan, or at least his character, is basically a precursor to the Ryan Gosling character.
Had the time of my life. Yeah.
But, and I never felt. Yes, you have. You have felt this way before.
But that's the thing, though. Like, when he does that move, she even asks him, "What's your move? What's your move?" And he's like, "I don't have a move."
The
and
then dirty he finds dancing.
The dirty dancing. And she's like, "That doesn't work." And she does it. and she can't help it. You see, that's the point, is that like there's certain rules. They work. Every girl wants to be hoisted in the air like that for some reason.
My advice to anyone watching this movie is, first of all, it's from 2011. Second of all, there is a quote within this movie that stuck with me more than a lot of the other quotes. It's when they're discussing the Scarlet Letter.
Oh, yes.
And it's, I think, at the parent-teacher. It's yeah, that's one of them. It's at the parent-teacher conference, I believe, where Julianne Moore and Steve Carell see each other for the first time in a long time. And she finds out that, wait. This is where Julianne Moore picks her son up from school after he's been in the principal's office for saying all the asshole stuff. So then she turns to her son, and she loves her kid so much. And I love that as well. Like, these two parents are so great in this movie with interacting with their kid. Even Julianne Moore, regardless of all the drama going on, she's still a really good mom, too. And
They seem
like great parents.
Not only that, but they have great chemistry. They're always talking smack about him behind his back, like real parents would. Like, I hate that haircut. I know he looks like a shaggy dog. I love that, but it's like endearing, you know?
She turns to her son and she says, "Scarlet Letter, you'd think they would have come up with a better story by now for what that book was trying to say."
Yeah.
And I thought about that quote and I'm like, this is how I feel about Crazy Stupid Love, is it's good. It gets all of the big main points across just fine, but what it's saying is not the best refined version. And again, Crazy Stupid Love makes me want to write a screenplay about Crazy Stupid Love, like in little improvements here and there.
Well, you should, but I can't think of another movie that did it better than this.
What about the Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, Before Midnight series?
That's a different love story. This isn't about like love as a whole. I think maybe you're thinking of this movie as love as a whole.
But it wants to be that.
No, I think this is a specific story about a crazy story that happened, and it's amusing to us, but it's about...
That's what love is.
What love can get through.
That's what love is. It's an amusing sort of...
But there's so many different types of love and so many different situations. This is what I'm saying. Yeah, like, that's why there's so many different formulas and situations for what makes a relationship work. And what I loved about this was this showed me that a relationship can work even when infidelity is involved, when there's an exception, you know, because it's not like she was like, I'll be with whoever. And, you know, she seems like she regrets it a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, she wants it back too. And you know what? It was a little bit harder. It was a little bit less of a hard pill to swallow when Cal does sleep with all those eight women. But see, the thing he realizes, what I love about that is that those eight women don't matter, you know? And just like, I think he learns that Lynn Hagen doesn't matter, not compared to the love that they have for each other, even though they messed up and he tried to get over her.
There's just
no getting over her. And if he leaves her, it will never be good. Like, it'll never be. And we don't know, but I like to think that they are soulmates and they both messed up. And he could go sleep with 100 women. And, you know, she's mad. She's like, 9? Yeah. 9? You know,
you
eight?
Really showed me.
Yeah.
That was the line.
Exactly. But that's not what it's about, you know? And this movie, while it may be naive and positive, and
that's the word I couldn't freaking find the whole time. But it is naive. It is a naive look at how all these things work out.
True. But I think the world needs more of that. That's what I lost when I was a kid.
Okay.
The death of that innocence of positivity and love that can endure and overcome.
You bet.
I became cynical, and this movie was what I needed to, like...
Love Actually does this better, I think.
You think so? Yes. I like this one better. I like this one better for me.
When I watched this, and I've only seen Love Actually once, and I've only seen this twice, so maybe you are a better barometer for... I don't know how many times
I've seen Love Actually a lot, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of cheating in that, okay?
Okay. I need to rewatch Love Actually.
There's
after
a lot of cheating
this.
In that, and there's a lot of people that do not end up with each other because of it.
Dang, we talked about serendipity. Serendipity is an interesting. There's cheating in serendipity too.
That's what I'm trying to say. But you know, I think that.
But that's the thing. You're never going to get a movie. There's never going to be a 2-hour movie about the optimal outcome.
Well, this.
There's
was
never
not,
going to be two
not even
hours.
This movie
of,
had an optimal outcome.
Right.
It had a good outcome, I think, and that's what I mean. Like sometimes when movies like this come out, I really pay attention because it was so... I mean, look, when you mentioned Dan in real life.
Yeah.
That's a Disney movie.
Yeah.
That's a straight Disney movie.
Yeah.
This is not a Disney movie. This movie was more Disney than Dan in real life.
Yes.
For sure.
Okay.
So that's why I don't even look at Disney as like something that could have been manufactured in a certain way, because they're so diverse that you can't even say. Back in the day, Disney was like that.
You don't think Disney wants to monopolize on emotion?
I think they want to monopolize on everything.
They came out with Inside Out. They're like, hey, we're the authority on how emotions work inside of kids.
They're the authority on going to be everything. Sports, okay, like news.
Yeah. But it's important.
They're bigger than just emotions at this point. They are the empire.
So let's tap into the secret sauce here, because we just got done mentioning the optimal outcome. We're never going to see a 2-hour romantic comedy that is perfect, like all the way through, start to finish. This is the best of what love can bring, start to finish.
Because it's subjective. It's right. Too subjective.
Right. But that's the point. Is subjectivity is like your actual engagement with love in real life. That is the optimal outcome.
Well, but that's what I'm trying to say, is that this movie was flawed
enough.
Don't
say educational.
No. Okay. Well, it can be a little educational, right, if you are not like lost, but you don't know how to talk to the opposite sex or something.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, to get better at it, you know.
That's true.
But there also is...
Def Jam's How to Be a Player does a pretty good job.
Nah, that's How to Not Get Caught. Which can go into that. That's a classic. But no, what I'm trying to say is that this movie, it can teach you a lot of things that maybe you forgot or relearn things. Like, as a child, that you knew to be true, and then the world told you that's not true. But the world lied to you. It can be true if you make it. You have to will it.
Disney lied to you.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. But they didn't really lie to you. I mean, they killed Bambi, or killed Bambi's mom. So that's not... They kill a lot of people, actually, Disney.
My wife's going to... Hates me for this. I've never seen Bambi.
Well, good on you, bro.
Anyways, stay away from it.
I'm not big on it, but I did want to go through a couple more things.
Technical aspects.
Yes, composer. Yeah. Okay, there's two composers, and I find this very fascinating, these composers. Christoph Beck was the main composer, the original score. I don't know if you know this, but I used to always see this VHS in Blockbuster. It's called Crossworlds, you remember, in 96? It had these three guys in the cover, and it's like all red. They're like in a desert, and it has like a bat or something like that.
I don't know, man.
Okay, well, Crossroads 96, Bring It On in 2000, yeah. Buffy and Angel, the TV series,
hey.
Under the Tuscan Sun, Fred Claus in 07, which I'm pretty sure that's how they met.
Under the Tuscan Sun, which is basically Julianne Moore's story.
Not Julianne Moore.
It's Diane Lane. I'm saying it's Julianne Moore's character story, as if she...
If she got divorced.
If she did get divorced.
Yeah.
And she...
She got screwed over on that one.
Yeah, she did.
But Fred Claus is probably where they all met, all these people. And since then, I mean, he did Charlie Bartlett too, The Hangover, Frozen. I mean, he's done some pretty big scores. I didn't even mention all of them, but just kind of the bigger ones that people might know. And then this is the interesting one, Nick Jurata. I don't know if you know who this guy is, but he is the founder and frontman of Devotchka. Do you know this band or this? I don't know if they're a band or if they're just a group. But you'll probably know them if you ever seen Little Miss Sunshine.
Mm.
They're the ones that composed a lot, or the main, you know, the tune that you hear, the melody.
Can't say that I do.
Yeah, I got it.
It's okay.
Album,
I'm learning.
Devotchka. He also did I Love You, Philip Morris, Paddington, Focus, Whiskey Tango. So he's kept on, but he's done a lot more movies too since then because of Little Miss Sunshine. I think they won an Oscar for that, perhaps. And so I find that really interesting, the two differences. It's like you got a band kind of guy and a composer kind of guy working together on this, but they've never worked
Sounds
with
like
each
it
other.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but they never worked with
each
other.
Well, this is a movie that doesn't have to rely on its score or music very much either.
Well,
it's more of a soundtrack movie. I do delineate like the movies that rely on score versus the movies that rely on like the right timing and music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Time of My Life is the most memorable musical remembrance that
I
have.
Don't forget
about
Top Gun, bro.
No. Of this particular movie, like the one song that I remember is
for me, it was Talking Heads because I love them so much.
But you see, that's their songs. You don't remember like the bum 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 beats.
Yeah, I wonder if
like
Nick Jurata was the one that chose the songs because he's more of a band guy. And then I think Christoph Beck probably did the little in-betweens that a lot of music will do. Like
now that we're talking about it, I do remember the only score elements that I really recall freshly were when Steve Carell's getting his makeover at the mall. Like when they go from scene to scene there, and it's sort of a hectic.
That's jazz, yeah.
Yeah, it's jazzy paced.
I was even telling you that. It's like Soderbergh stuff, you know? It's very Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
And he's like, be better than the gap, Kyle.
Yeah, be better than the gap. Double slap to the cheeks.
Yeah, I love the slaps, bro. Because in the end, he slaps them back, and he's like, and then Emma Stone's like, "Oh, this is gonna be fun."
Mm-hmm.
And let's not also, you know, get away from the fact that it seems like Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are like
they have good
together
chemistry.
All the time. You think they're soulmates?
Nah,
bro?
Maybe.
Well,
they certainly are on screen. They do
Gangster
very well
Squad.
In La La Land.
La La Land was so dope. Mm-hmm. I loved La La Land, but. You know,
it's like the evolution of their relationship started with Crazy Stupid Love on screen.
Probably, because there's a story that she says, that she tells. You guys should go check it out on like the Graham Norton show or something, because that's one of the best TV talk shows in England.
Plug them.
Yeah, they're drinking and stuff, so they come up with stuff.
Plug us, Graham Norton.
Yeah, plug us. But apparently, when they did the Time of Your Life hoist, that she didn't realize that she had a fear of heights. And so when she did that, she
4 feet off the ground.
Yeah. And apparently Ryan Gosling didn't know. And she started scratching his eyes out when she was up in the air, like reflexively, and then ran off set and cried and watched The Labyrinth. And then they had to get a body double to like do that hoist. That's why if you notice, there's like it cuts to like the wide shot, you know, where it's raining outside and you see them doing the hoist. So with her running. So just a little tidbit. If you're watching that, you'll probably get that from there. But moving on to, I want to go into the budget of this. It was shot for $50 million and made in the box office $142.7 million. Again, that's a global number.
Yeah.
So for a comedy,
when was this
romantic
released?
Comedy?
Was it released?
2011.
Months. Was it
July
a,
29th.
Okay, so it wasn't a Valentine's Day thing.
No, but it was a summer thing. So ultimately, it probably didn't do too well, but it made more
romantic
than its money back.
Romantic comedies in the summer are really hard to swing.
Period, at all
unless
now.
Unless Michael Bay directs them.
What love story did
Pearl
he direct?
Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah.
Arguably.
Yeah, yeah. But that's more of an action war movie. It's different.
All right, fair enough.
It's different with a love movie in there.
Yes.
Traditionally, love, romance, comedy do not make much money in the movie theater at any time of the year. It's kind of like a rated R movie. For a long time, rated R movies did not make money. But people
have shells, man. They don't want their emotions being messed with on the big screen anymore. That's why you got Fast and Furious 9 dropping.
Yeah, well, all the romantic comedies, because generally they get shot for about 40 to 60 million.
Yeah.
It's just that these movies are no longer being shown in the theater. All the $40 to $60 million movies are going straight to Netflix or something like that. That's more in their budget now. So if you're making a movie, even if it's not independent, it will be on Netflix probably because they just can't. They can't do this. They can't make money with this in the theater anymore with those kind of numbers. Another one I wanted to talk about was the cinematography, which is Andrew Dunn. Not somebody I'm too familiar with. He's not like the bigger names like Roger Deakins or, you know, what's his name? I forget the Lubezki, you know, guys like this. But he did one of his first movies was Chattahoochee in 89, L.A. Story in 91, The Bodyguard in 92.
Hey, there's a hell of a romance.
Yeah, The Crucible in 96, Addicted to Love in 97, Ever After in 98, Hitch in 05, Precious in 09. I forgot The Butler in 2013, and I forgot The Count of Monte Cristo in 02. Sweet Home Alabama in 02 and Stage Beauty in 04.
The Count of Monte Cristo, sorry. When you go through these lists of movies, it brings me on my tangents of some of these. I love that movie. That's the Jim Caviezel, Guy Pearce rendition of Count of Monte Cristo. Such a good movie.
Well, such a good story.
An all-time classic, of course, written by Alexander Dumas. So, yeah.
Dumas.
Duhast.
But I feel like this cinematographer is a little all over the place. I mean,
he's done a lot of romantic stuff, though.
I put that on there on purpose to draw similarities, but he's actually quite everywhere. And then, like I said, like The Count of Monte Cristo, even though it is a love story, really,
there's a love story.
It's more of a revenge
Ever
story.
Ever After is a love story, though. There was another one you mentioned that it was actually
Bodyguard, Sweet Home Alabama.
That's one of my favorite romances. I miss the days where the movie could just be a flat out romance.
Yeah, well,
The Bodyguard is a romance with a bit of drama.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean,
The Bodyguard is about having a love, is experiencing a love that you cannot sustain because of the dichotomies of the personalities.
There's a lot of movies like that still coming out today. We got Avatar. No, I was just kidding, man.
As a realistic look at it, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Kevin Costner, Whitney Houston, the late, great Whitney Houston. She could have acted a whole heck of a lot more, but she didn't.
You're talking about early 90s Message in a Bottle days when there was like romance, like hardcore. The Notebook, bro. Come on. That was a big one. That was huge.
Things have shifted to, and I get it, the money's with the teen romances because...
Is The Notebook teen romance, though?
No. The Notebook is 20-year-old romance, and it came out in 2004.
I love it.
That's why we were the crowd that was going to love that movie. And in 2004, we were 19.
I didn't watch it until like later in my life because I was like, I don't want to see that stupid movie.
Yeah, right.
And then I watched it and
now
I was like,
Nicholas Sparks. Yeah, I want to see all Nicholas Sparks stuff.
God, I'm such a, I'm a hopeless romantic. I'm a little bit. And that's why I love this movie.
But what do these kids have to go off of these days as far as romance is concerned?
Fast and Furious, bro. What do you think, man? No, I love this movie.
Letty and Dumb.
I think you'll love this if you are a hopeless romantic. Like I said, the specs are a little
Be a hopeful weird. Romantic.
Yeah, I that's what I am. I guess you're right. I'm a hopeful romantic, not a hopeless romantic. And I don't know. I
hate that terminology.
Me too. You're right. I'm a hopeful romantic.
Stop being hopeless romantics.
Yeah, and that's what this is.
Be hopeful.
The hope at the end of this movie, like even when the babysitter, I think it was a nice, I know it's a little weird, but she gives them the naked picture at the end, like until you get to be of age, here you go.
Here's your spank bank material.
Yeah, but he was like, it's such an endearing thing because you know that it seems like he really loves her. And I do believe that a 13-year-old can be in love. They really can.
Especially if you're Julianne Moore and Steve Carell's son in this movie, because Steve Carell's all about it. And
well, he taught his son to be a good man.
Right.
He taught him to love. And he taught him that there is a soulmate. And those are good things. Those are things that the world needs more of. And you could say it's naive.
What the world needs now
is love.
Sweet love.
That's some Bacharach around here, this right?
This is, maybe we're just in the wrong podcast lane. Maybe we should just do renditions of movie or of famous songs.
We'll for sure.
No, we'll edit this for sure is what we'll do.
But man, watch this movie. Just get some popcorn with your loved one. Have a little laugh. I really don't think this is surface. I really think there's a lot of deeper messages here. They point to make butts of like superficial people and things like that, which is, it's cool, man. I mean, we all can have a laugh, but don't take it to heart as far as the bad things that come out of this movie.
Okay.
Like that could be misconceived or misinterpreted because, man, this movie has a lot of heart. And I think that's where in fact, a lot of the reviews will say this, that there's a lot of loops and things that they didn't like, but ultimately the heart wins out, man. Like, I would at least give this a 7 to 8 on a 10 scale just for heart.
That's
Rocky
fair.
Alone, you know? I don't have to get in. The technical communication of the film itself is pretty good. It's fast. It's lean. It's like, there's nothing to really be like, wow, this was super great or wow, this sucked. This was like good to great.
Oh, man. I'm going to use technical communication everywhere I go now, Philip. Thank you so much.
I mean, that's what it is. That's why I try to say the beginning of the movie, the intro, with the feet touching each other and different feet.
Absolutely. That's just all technical communication.
Yeah. You're setting us up for, well, these people have different shoes.
You bet. No, there are movies that did this in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah.
All technical communication. In the silent era, it was all technical communication as well. So, yeah, there's a lot to like in Crazy Stupid Love with that. There are some highlights in the story as well. If you can relate with these characters like instantly, you're going to love a lot of what this movie has to offer. Mm-hmm. If you can't relate to them, you're going to feel a little misrepresented in them.
I can see that.
And that's where maybe it took me an hour and a half to talk about how the fact that I feel misrepresented because I can't really relate. I relate to bits and pieces of each character,
any one of these men.
Yeah,
at any time,
never,
really.
Never not one of them. And I don't want the movie to tell me that I am one of them.
And at the same time, I was all three of them at some point. No, I get it, man. Yeah. Like that's the beauty of movies. They are subjective. And sometimes you have to be ready or have gone through enough to really relate.
So yeah, that's pretty much Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah. So yeah, we're going to get to one last thing about Crazy Stupid Love as I'm ripping up my paper. But yeah, man.
It's a good Valentine's Day flick for sure.
Yeah. And you know, if you're feeling if you're feeling lost or confused, or if you're hurt, or if you've decided to be cynical, if you decided to let go of things that made you a better person, maybe watch this movie and realize you're going down the wrong path, because you can continue going down this path and learn on your own, or you can learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, learning from other people's mistakes is under, that's what they're there for.
Yes, and you know, movies can really teach you that.
Treat the world around you as a scientific.
That's what stories are there for us. It's there to reinforce our good ideals. It's there to change the old traditions or to things that are not true. It's there to keep us from making missteps or from us being super unhappy. You know, so when you look at
love, at least to be happier.
Yeah, exactly, to be happier. So Crazy Stupid Love, and it's in the title. Yeah, love is crazy, and it is stupid.
So far.
But it is the best thing about living, in my mind. Love is the answer to most things in this life. So even though it's crazy and it's stupid and it's not logical and all these crazy things, it doesn't matter. What love is, does it make you happy? Go for it. Get your soulmate, guys. Go get them.